Describe kind of your role as committee woman, because I think one of your biggest things is getting people out to vote, especially if Democrats. Is that correct?
Yes. What the role of a committee person is really to organize. And this is, I like to make it clear to people, this is committee people do not get paid for being committee people. Mm-hmm. So they have to run an election. You have to raise money to run an election to win a seat that there's no check coming. So this is purely based on either you love this or you want to do something in this position. And one of the things that you are asked to do, besides be a party representative to try to, you know, get more people involved in politics, is to organize people to get out the vote. You also are supposed to help identify people to work in the polling places on election day. Mm-hmm. So you can select, you can ask, get with the election board, say, hey, I have these three people or four people that want to work, you know, at this particular polling place, hear their names, get in touch with them, that kind of thing.
I'm just going to move your microphone a little bit more.
Okay.
All right. That should be much better.
Yes.
So it kind of goes back to the first question. It seems like for these municipal elections, especially in St. Louis County, but also probably in St. Louis City to mm-hmm. some extent, turnout is always very low.
Right.
Do you have any theories on why that is?
Yes. The municipal elections are nonpartisan here, but it's no secret. Most people know which way you lean, red or blue, you know. And there's a lot of money that's raised when you run in a federal election. So you get a lot of commercials. You know, it's to the point where everybody's saying, I wish these ads would stop running. They're all over the radio, television. Your mailbox is usually filled with it. There's not as much money behind these municipal elections, if there's any money behind them. A lot of it is probably a lot of donated time and donated work by your family knocking on some neighborhood doors. So it doesn't get the same attention that national elections get. And that's what, when people see the big money behind it, they want to pay attention to what's going on in D.C., but they don't realize that what's really affecting your everyday life is what your neighbor two blocks around, who's the alderperson, they're having so much more effect on your life than the president of the United States.
I think one of the things that might kind of personify this low turnout phenomenon is, I think earlier this year, there was a vote to disincorporate Uplands Park. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a pretty weighty decision of whether you're going to live in a town or not anymore.
Mm-hmm.
From what I remember, it's like 100 people voted out of maybe 500 or 600.
Yep.
Didn't really seem like it was something that even caught the attention of most people.
Right.
And that was probably multiplied and across a bunch of municipalities where a lot of the contested mayoral races or city council races or bond issues or whatnot. Not a lot of turnout there.
Mm-hmm.
How do you kind of feel when you see all those things?
Well, it explains why one of the largest rules of organizing is you target. You do not go after everybody because everybody is not going to show up. You target who's there and who has the interest in it, who understands it. It's frustrating. And some of it is because, okay, we have 90 municipalities now. There's no way even in the media, whether it's television or print or radio, to cover what's going on and discuss all the issues of what's going on in 90 municipalities. Usually every once in a while we hear about the things that are a lot more, I guess, exciting, like the Ellisville mayor thing. You hear about when Dellwood was going through his police changes. You hear about those big things. But the usual everyday things that are going to make somebody come out in April is not, it doesn't make people vote. The other issue is the election's in April. Most people who are on that presidential cycle, when you're on that presidential ballot, people show up for president, they'll vote for the other things down the ticket. Now you're trying to create a whole new voting habit, which starts in April. So that, because it's not on the same cycle as the presidential election, people don't really know about it or show up.
Now, kind of getting on the question of why some people don't run, the example that I think I'm going to start off with is in Pasadena Hills. When I was interviewing the mayor of Pasadena Hills for a story on how there's a lot of municipalities and how some of them are doing better than others. He told me this anecdote when I asked him, how did you become mayor? And he basically told me that nobody signed up to run for mayor and that there was going to be some serious implications from the county if nobody signed up, like a write-in candidate could win or they'd have to have a special election. And that to me kind of personified the issue. It's like for a lot of these smaller communities, you don't really see a lot of people just chomping at the bit to run a lot. Maybe that is kind of an anomaly. But when you look at, for example, the mayor of Ferguson was unopposed the last time, and I'm sure that that was replicated across the county. Have you kind of seen that as a committee woman where people don't really want to run for these positions? And if so, what's kind of your theory on why they don't end up doing it?
Well, with 90 municipalities, you're spreading out a lot of talent and looking to fill in places in a lot of different seats. First of all, I mean, you're looking for basically 90 mayors of some sort. That's a tall order for a region. But I almost think now, let's see, I was appointed in 2011. You almost have to kind of be crazy. You're going to be criticized. You're going to be talked about. And this is all on your spare time because you have to have a full-time job. A lot of these mayor positions are part-time, so you live an entire life with your family, your personal life, a professional life. You live a whole entire life, and this is what you're choosing to do in your free time. So you're going to take on a lot of criticism, and it's a huge responsibility. The look at the mayor Ferguson position, it's a part-time job, but clearly there are full-time responsibilities. It's not necessarily attractive. The pay isn't that good. You know, most people are seeking power. They try to use it maybe for something else professionally, but you go through a lot that people don't know about in any type of political office.
Do you think that the fact that a lot of these municipal offices basically pay very little or non-existent kind of changes who runs for them, that it might kind of compel somebody who is just extremely passionate and has a lot of time on their hands, somebody who's retired, somebody who's wealthy, and may kind of block out just everyday working people because they don't have the time and they don't really have the incentive to drop what they're doing and running, especially in maybe some of the municipalities that are more working class or lower income? Somebody can't just drop what they're doing to run for mayor because they have to work and pay the bills. Is that kind of your sense as well?
That's exactly what a lot of it is. If it's a part-time position and you're making a part-time salary, you can't live off of that. So again, it's a huge responsibility to add into something. Oh, I do this in my spare time. It's a huge commitment. And I've definitely learned it's a lot easier to make comments and criticize people than to actually see what it takes to do this work.
Do you think people just do it because they're power hungry, they want to control things, they want to be kind of the guy in a certain, or the woman, especially in Greendale, for example? You know, why do you think people end up doing it if they end up taking that leap?
Well, let's see. For me, a committee person who I don't get paid a lick, never mind getting a part-time type of position, there are some people who are power hungry, and maybe they have professions or jobs where it builds in nicely into them. Sometimes, you know, people tend to be attorneys, so they can kind of build this into their practice as a resume builder. But then there are also people who come more about it from the more activist point of view, and they come from an activist background, and they understand the role that politics clearly plays in activism. Other people just want to get involved. They have a little bit more time on their hands, and they're like, you know, I want to see what this is about. I want to give back. It depends on the individual of what's going on.
Now, one of the things that's gotten a lot of attention here and elsewhere is the fact that the elected leadership of Ferguson is overwhelmingly white, except for one person. I don't know if that particular situation is replicated across North St. Louis County, but I know for a fact that there are some majority black towns with white mayors. I think Belknor is one of them, the aforementioned Pasadena Hills.
Bell Fountain Neighbors.
So I think that more black mayors have been elected to majority black towns over recent years for the first time. Greendale is another example. But it does seem like that does happen. Now, I don't want to necessarily convey that all white mayors of black towns are undeserving or don't work hard or whatnot, but it has kind of drawn some attention. Like, why do you think it happens sometimes? Is it just sometimes that a competent black candidate just doesn't step up, or is it could just be that there are some really talented white politicians that attract a broad range of support in some of those communities?
Another part of being Democratic or whatever your committee party position is to do candidate recruiting. It is very hard to recruit candidates for office, especially in the black community, because honestly, so much of the politics is race-based. And who really wants to deal with tackle in your free time that you do have? This is not an attractive venue for a lot of people to always be arguing and fighting about politics and race. And for people, it's unfortunate that people automatically assume that if you're black, you're going to get the black vote, and to think that white people won't vote for you. Like, it's extremely insulting. So a lot of black people, we'd rather not deal with that, because we are dealing with race issues in our everyday life whatsoever. But when you're in politics, it brings the race issues to the table more often than when you deal with it in your regular life.
Let's look forward in the Ferguson situation. I know that you live in unincorporated St. Louis County, but you represent, I guess, part of Ferguson or all of Ferguson?
A large part of Ferguson.
What kind of do you see the way forward in Ferguson as far as getting more people to vote and getting good candidates to run regardless of their race, just to maybe change what's going on there right now?
Well, I'm finding that there are a lot of white residents in Ferguson who feel very passionately about this Justice for Mike Brown and this police brutality issue. So I don't want people to think that it's just black people who are out here. I have seen so many white people at these protests, who participate in the protests, who donate water and soda and food to the protesters. So this is not just a black and white issue. We need just good people in government positions, period, and clearly at all levels, because this is what happens when nobody is paying attention. And people need to understand government. You need to understand who's actually running the city. There is a position called city manager. A lot of people just think the mayor is running the city. There actually is a position. This is a career for people. They are city managers.
That was going to be my next question. I know that there's been a lot of talk about, like, recalling the mayor and replacing him. But if you don't, like, if the structure stays the same and the city manager remains dominant, and especially if you put a mayor in there that doesn't agree with the rest of the council and doesn't get along with the city manager and doesn't really have enough sway to vote the city manager out, isn't there a possibility that the situation in Ferguson could be a lot worse without changing either the entire governmental structure or the entire council? Like, has that been something that you've been thinking about a lot?
I've been thinking about, there are lots of steps that need to be taken before we even start crying about recall. Why don't first, it's been, as of tomorrow, it would have been a month since Mike Brown was shot. We have not had a Ferguson City Council meeting. So that means city business has been put on hold for an entire month. We need to get back into the business of having these city council meetings. The citizens of Ferguson need to demand from their city council members that they take a vote of confidence on the mayor. Let's get everybody on record. Let's first see who will take a vote of confidence, and then see how they really feel about his position. Before we just start running the recall, maybe if there's a vote of no confidence, he'll see that he needs to step down. You know, there are just some procedural things. Let's start getting people on the record. Let's start getting citizens engaged with their council to voice their opinions, so that way we can start getting some things on the record first.
I've been asking this of a lot of people, but do you think that maybe just not just in Ferguson, but in a lot of these cities, and this is kind of a risky idea, because I understand the reason why there's city manager process in place. You don't want a situation where the mayor controls everything and just, like, appoints all of his friends or mm-hmm. his family to be police officers. That's mm-hmm. just a bad situation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm sure that happened a lot before the city manager. The problem I see with this current system is it just kind of fosters this aura of unaccountability, because basically an unelected person is running the entire government. It takes like a pretty strong majority of a council to get rid of him. Mm-hmm. And you have to basically go through him to tell a certain employee what to do. I mean, the mayor was talking about how he was going to tell police officers or discipline them, but then I had to bring up the fact that you can't actually do that.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that maybe there needs to be a rethinking of this, where maybe the council or elected officials have more power over decision-making of departments, or is that kind of a more micro thing that maybe gets done in the future after this situation?
I think that in the end of the day, if the citizens stay engaged and on top of their city council people, a whole lot of heat can be placed there. And that's what's missing. I mean, I think that if the there's a city council member, she's a former police officer. She's one of the officers involved in one of the four federal lawsuits, the one that's on appeal where they beat this guy and then charged him with damaging government property because his blood got on their uniform. I mean, I think her name is Kim Thien. Like, I just wonder, the community does not know that this is, you know, that some of this stuff is going on. So I think a more well-informed group of citizens who dedicate themselves to keeping their council members accountable, that's what's been lacking here. So I'm just going to be pushing a whole lot of voter education. And in voter education, it's not just who to vote for, but it's how government works. That's what people don't understand. You take a civics class, you know, in school, and they teach you about federal government. They might teach you about state government. Nobody teaches you about what's going on at the local level. How does this government work? Because that's where we're going to get down to. Are these structural issues, or does it really just come down to continuing to hold your city council people accountable?
My last question for you, do you think that the last couple or 3 weeks in Ferguson will amount to positive change to how ordinary citizens view their local government? Or are you kind of worried that as time goes on, it's just going to revert back to the same old thing that happened before? Or is there really no looking back after this?
There is no looking back after this. There are people who are they're asking questions that they never have asked before. They're seeking information that they've never sought before. What I see is people out on the streets coming together and really developing relationships. So I lived there, and this is something even my sister told me. She said, you know, ever since this happened, I noticed that even when I leave the house and I'm in the grocery store, we all seem to look at each other now in the store and say hi. And there's been a real change in the community. And part of my job as committee woman is to make sure that things are not going to go back to normal, and to help empower the citizens and get them organized so they can organize themselves and take ownership of this change that they want to drive.